disgrace.
A public Zoom call turned tense after two Republican canvassers in Wayne County, which includes Detroit, initially blocked the move to certify election results.
Shame on you. Shame on you for leading to this level of corruption. You have disavowed your right to even sit in the seat that you occupy.
Donald Trump is doing a great service in exposing the dysfunction and the criminality and the negligence and the incompetence of our voting system.
We have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. Donald right now is a desperate man. He's terrified of what the future holds when he no longer has the power of the Oval Office protecting him.
Hi, I'm Sharon Pratt, host of IPPH On Air. IPPH, the Institute of Politics, Policy, and History, housed on the campus of the University of the District of Columbia with the mission of rediscovering the history of Washington, D.C. while drilling down on touchstone issues of the day, issues that have perennially plagued our nation. And because of the consequential nature of this election cycle, IPPH has been hosting for 1 month a special election series. And so today we have our final episode, and that episode is called Democracy on Uncertain, Shaky Grounds. And so welcome to IPPH On Air. Malcolm Nance, so wonderful to have you with us.
Sharon, it's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You know, Malcolm Nance is an author. He is a foreign policy analyst and a counterintelligence analyst contributor for MSNBC. I want to begin with your trilogy. You have The Plot to Hack America, which you published and was out weeks before the 2016 election, where you basically could foresaw what happened with the involvement of Putin disrupting the election to the disadvantage of Hillary Clinton, then The Plot to Destroy Democracy, and more recently, The Plot to Betray America. Now, your trilogy basically suggests that Putin is consumed with destabilizing democracies in Western civilization, and in particular, the United States. Is that a fair characterization?
Oh, it's a very fair characterization. You know, as you said, my claim to fame certainly being on MSNBC as the counterterrorism contributor is one thing, but I was the first person in U.S. media to go on air and warn that the United States was actually under attack by the Russians using WikiLeaks in a disinformation warfare strategy to elect Donald Trump as president. And that was considered a conspiracy theory for almost 4 years. I mean, despite the fact that the CIA had put out an identical report on the exact same day that Plot to Hack America was published, the CIA put out an identical version of Plot to Hack America. In fact, in the later editions, we put the CIA report in there, and you can compare the two. Then, as you said, my next book, Plot to Destroy Democracy, I needed to take it broader and show people that there was a geopolitical strategy being affected by the Russians and by the KGB officer in chief of Russia, Vladimir Putin, that was executing an old Soviet belief, but doing it with modern oligarch money. And that was essentially to bring about the end of Western liberal democracies by using the most nefarious weapon that you can imagine, which is democracy. They would, you know, create political parties, fund political parties in Europe, particularly certainly now that Russia sees itself as an extremely conservative country. And they found greater kinship with right-wing extremist governments, including those of like Austria, for example. The OFP of Austria was actually founded in 1952 by two Nazi SS officers. And with Putin's help, they became the ruling government of Austria. So Russia has certainly kept their fingers in the pie of what the Soviet Union had started. And Vladimir Putin understood that to make Russia great again, you had to execute the strategy of dismantling liberal democracy around Europe. And so Putin actually was nice enough last year to give a speech in which he came out and said that exact thing, that liberal democracy is a failed ideology in the world. Well, American constitutional republicanism is liberal democracy. I mean, in fact, you could say we were the first nation to actually make it work. And many other nations have followed suit. And the entire Cold War was about the expansion of liberal democracy and free trade around the world, as opposed to authoritarianism and dictatorship. So what we are seeing now is the execution of that strategy by carrying out essentially a co-option of three branches of the American right. And the first was the religious right, was co-opted by the Russians starting in 2010. They actually were holding conferences every year called Protection of Christianity Conferences, and saying Christianity should be in a war, a culture war against Islam. And American conservatives ate that up. And every year they go to Russia. And Franklin Graham, his son, is a very good friend of Vladimir Putin and calls him a protector of Christianity. Then there was the conservative party, the Republican Party, and the NRA. And they were just met by agents of influence and walls of money. And then finally, Donald Trump himself as an asset of the Russians, who, you know, as we've just recently found out, but actually we recently confirmed, you know, the figure for years was that Trump was $440 million in debt to Russian oligarchs. And only recently have they confirmed it's $420 million, but no one's really added up the interest. He may be, in fact, as deep as $1 billion in debt to people who invested in all of these projects in the 2000s. So this, using these people to dismantle American democracy from the inside, has been relatively successful. 40% to 45% of America will not believe a word they hear unless it comes from Donald Trump's mouth. And he has pretty clearly made it obvious that he is going to be what I would call a constitutional autocrat.
Are we at a perilous point regarding preserving our democratic system? Now, there's always been a certain irreverence on the part of Americans regarding governance. I mean, after all, we began with the revolution. You know, shaking off the yoke of the British monarchy. And we've always had that kind of irreverence throughout the history of the country. But now they had one, I think it was Pew Research, where they said 40% of Americans were sympathetic to an autocracy, that with the growing diversity in the country, not just in ethnicity, but in ideology, that a good 40% would be okay with an autocracy. And then, of course, there has been this solid 40% for Trump. It's pretty unnerving, unsettling to think that there could be a popular vote for Biden that results in an electoral vote, if you count the popular vote appropriately, but that still, with the help of Russia, that one could...
Let me put it this way, not re-seize power, okay? He could retain power through the destruction of American constitutional republicanism. This is a grave moment, and I do not use that word lightly. I am using it in every sense of the frightening fantasticalness of it. This is a grave moment in American history. Never before has anyone ever truly thought that they would get rid of the system. And again, this is precisely what was being done in Europe, Hungary. They made a big attempt on Italy, Greece, Austria, good pushes towards that in Poland, in Germany, in France, backing the ultra-conservatives. The Russians have been funding these ultra-conservative political groups. When I say ultra-conservative, I mean really fascist political groups who believe that money is the common ideology of these nation states, not democracy or American values. Trump believes in that. And further to your point about 40% of the country feeling that they would have no problem being in an autocracy, there was an interview by a woman on at a Trump rally in January, February of this year, where she said, I never thought I'd want to vote for a dictator, but if we have to have one, it should be Trump.
How do we where do we go?
First, let me give you some confidence about some things. First off, there will be a president of the United States on 12 noon, January 21st, 2021. And if it is not Donald Trump, if he has not won this election in a clean manner that everyone can have confidence in, and the opponent wins, Joe Biden wins, the system will just turn off for Donald Trump. He thinks he cannot say, I'm going to use, you know, Customs and Border Patrol officers. Those are the people he brought into Washington, D.C. The National Guard has now since been removed from him as a tool that he can use. He can declare a state of emergency all he wants, but if people do not believe it, the armed forces will not be involved. They will not be able to say, I've called on the army to start filling American cities. I've nationalized the National Guard. These are unauthorized orders. Those are, well, let me rephrase that. They're not unauthorized. They're illegal orders. And we have been bred in the armed forces. I mean, my family served in the armed forces since the Civil War. We have been bred to believe that all unauthorized or illegal orders must be resisted and not followed. If he says, I am declaring this election a fraud, I'm president of the United States, wait to see what happens. I mean, 2 weeks before he comes, you know, before the inauguration, movers are going to come to his house anyway. The system is not designed for people to retain power. If he decides he's going to engineer state assemblies and just declare himself the winner, okay, well, you know what? That's where you're going to start getting votes of confidence against you, where, you know, 50% of the governor, you know, in the United States or more will say, we're not playing this game. I mean, they can try it, but the word coup will be on the front page of the New York Times, coup d'etat. And for the first time in American history, we will have a pure dictator. And I believe that 100 million people will take to the streets.
Malcolm Nance, thank you so very much. Your insights are terrific.
It is my pleasure to have been here.